The Go-Ahead Boys and the Racing Motorboat by Ross Kay. Chapter 8, The Coming of the Caledonia. In response to Fred's action, there was a loud shout of protest from the men on board. Everyone still was manifesting the effect of the drunken spree through which they had passed the preceding night. As yet, however, they had not offered any violence. And although Fred's heart was beating rapidly, he resolutely stuck to his task, and in a brief time, the black growler darted forward like a thing alive. For a moment, the uninvited passengers apparently were startled by the unexpected action of the young captain. They speedily recovered, however, from their surprise, and one of the men, turning to their leader, said, "My, ain't she pretty, Jim?" "She is that," replied Jim promptly. "She looks better than she did when I took my last trip to Niagara. When I left my house on Fifth Avenue, I didn't think she'd ever measure up to what she was that time, but she's going one better. Yes, sir, she's all you can say she is." Still, the men did not interfere with Fred in his management of the motorboat. Apparently, too, they did not have any objection to the voyage. Indeed, the Go-Ahead Boys already were aware of the fact that every one of their self-invited guests had brought a small bundle with him. They naturally inferred that these bundles contained most of the earthly possessions of their noisy passengers. "How is it, Jim?" called another of the men. "Isn't it about time we had breakfast?" "That's right," spoke up another. "I'm hungry, too." "Seems to me you would like one of them grapefruits." "Grapefruit? You don't know what they be," retorted Jim. "You tell us what they be," responded the man, unabashed by the rebuke of their leader. "Don't you know," retorted Jim scornfully, "why grapefruit's the stuff that grows on grapevines." "Get out," said the other one. "I guess I know enough about the country to know that grapes grow on grapevines." "In course they do," acknowledged Jim. "But this isn't grapes. This is grape-" "Fruit! It takes a special vine to grow it." "Does it grow right on the vine?" "In course it does. What do you think, it grows under the ground like tomatoes?" "Tomatoes don't grow under the ground," spoke up another of the party. "It's potatoes that grow under the ground." "It's all one," retorted Jim glibly. "Potatoes and tomatoes. I knew one I grew in the air and the other grew in the ground." "What about the grapefruits, Jim?" demanded the first speaker. "Well, they grow on the vines. They're just like big yellow grapes. Many's the time out in my country estate, I have climbed the ladder and picked 'em from the vines that grow so high they hid the side of the street from the pizzery of my bungalow." "I'm wondering where you got this yacht, Jim," inquired another. "Never mind how I got it as long as we got it. That's the main thing," interrupted another one. "What I want to know is about those grapefruits we're talking about. How does it taste?" "Fine, fine," answered Jim promptly. Then, returning to the boys, he inquired, "Have you got anything on board to eat?" "You see that monument up yonder?" interrupted another, pointing to a tall granite shaft that could be seen in the distance. The entire party, including the boys, at once looked in the direction indicated and saw a beautiful memorial stone, although few of them were aware of what it commemorated. "Yes, that's my granddad's tombstone," said one of the tramps. "I guess he must have been some man," explained one of his companions. "It's a pity the rest of the family didn't take after him." "We did, but we didn't want to hog the whole thing. We had to let someone else have a chance, too." Meanwhile, the black growler was speeding swiftly over the waters of the Erie Canal. Fred was driving at high speed, and as the boat sped forward, he was keenly watching for the coming of a boat that might provide help for the Go-Ahead Boys in their predicament. Several canal boats had been passed, but there was no one on board who appeared to be able to help. The unwelcome guests still talked noisily to one another, but in the main they ignored the boys, and as yet had not offered any violence.
"Who's running this here boat, Jim?"
suddenly spoke up one of the passengers.
"I thought you said this was your yacht."
"I did say so,"
answered Jim promptly. "I'm just taking out a pleasure party. Didn't you never go to no picnic afore?
I want you to be good, for we have got company on board. When you have got guests, you have got to be perlite, whether you want to be or not."
Still, the black growler was moving swiftly. The waters over which she was passing seethed and boiled, as if they had been heated by unseen fires. Even Fred had lost a part of his alarm, as he began to suspect that his uninvited passengers did not know how to manage the boat. If they did, it was difficult to understand why they had not yet driven the boys away and taken charge. There was another thought in Fred's mind that was perplexing. He suspected that the supply of gasoline was running low. He had neglected to have the tank filled the preceding night, believing that he had a supply ample to carry them forward until they could obtain more. Suppose the motorboat should stop. What would the men do? They might accuse him of deliberately stopping, and in that event, he was aware that there might be serious trouble. Indeed, he was still puzzled to understand why the men appeared to be so contented. If they had been workers on the canal or had been employed by any of the boats, why was it that they were free this morning? He was aware that the city of Rome could not be far away. If once he should be able to bring the Black Growler safely within the borders of the city, he was confident he would be able to rid himself speedily of the men, whose presence with every passing moment was becoming more difficult to bear. He looked eagerly ahead for signs of the city. He was unable to discover any, however. But his fears increased as he became more positive that his supply of gasoline was low. If only it would last a half hour longer. On either side of the canal was a level stretch of country, and near to the water no houses were to be seen. His friends had taken seats on the deck forward. In low tones, they conversed among themselves, but Fred was too busy in his own task, either to heed what they were saying or to join their conversation. A few minutes later, after the speed of the boat had materially decreased, Fred said abruptly, "We have got to stop." "What for?" demanded the leader, quickly rising as he spoke and turning toward the young pilot. "Our gasoline is gone." "Look here, young fella," said the leader of the gang after he had silently glared at Fred a moment. "I don't want you to try any of your games on us. We're bad men. Now then, you keep this boat going," he added threateningly.
"I only wish I could do it," said Fred.
"Are you giving us straight goods when you say your gasoline is gone?"
"I am."
"What are you going to do?"
"Nothing. That's the trouble. You can't do anything without gasoline. I'm thinking of letting some of my passengers go ahead and get enough to carry us into the town. Do you know how far it is to Rome?"
"Must be about 3 miles.
"That wouldn't be very much of a walk," said Fred glibly. For some unexplained reason, his courage now had returned, and he stood in less fear of his rough and noisy guests.
"What are you going to do?" again demanded the leader.
"There isn't anything I can do," retorted Fred sharply. "Unless some of you will go ahead and get some gasoline."
"That's right, Jim," spoke up one of the companions. "We'll go and get his gasoline. Tell him to give us $4, and we'll get a good supply." "That's right," spoke up Jim quickly. "We can't get gasoline without some money."
"Oh, one of us will go along and pay the bills," spoke up John, who up to this point had taken no part in the conversation.
"How much money have you got?"
"I guess we have got just enough to buy 15 gallons of gasoline."
"All right, then. Give it to us and we'll get the gasoline for you."
"I told you that we shan't give you the money," said John.
"We'll go with you.
Perhaps we can get a ride on a canal boat or something."
"You won't save much time that way," retorted Jim. "The only thing to do is to let us have the money and save ourselves a lot of trouble."
"We're not going to give you any money," said John, quietly. "I told you that before. The thing for you to do is clear out, every one of you, if you don't want to help." Unknown to his companions, John had been keeping a careful outlook on the canal behind them. In the distance, he had seen a yacht approaching that he was confident was the Caledonia, which they had passed when first they had set forth on their voyage. He was confident also that the coming of the yacht, together with the number of men that comprised her crew, would be sufficient to overawe the half-dozen men that had forced their company upon the go-ahead boys.
"Yonder comes the Caledonia," he exclaimed suddenly. "They will give us a lift as soon as they catch up with us."
Instantly, the eyes of everyone on board the Black Growler were turned towards the approaching yacht. Apparently, the sight had markedly different effects. The go-ahead boys were elated. But their passengers, after a hasty glance and a few words spoken in low tones to one another, instantly seizing their bundles, leaped ashore and ran swiftly towards the road, which was not more than 50 yards distant. End of chapter, read by Jorge Acosta for Lit2Go. On the web at fcit.usf.edu.